beware of unfamiliar aircraft, even small, simple ones. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's a CFI with a flight school in Western New York and growing to additional locations. His newsletter for years has taken on the establishment and the status quo in terms of aviation safety, especially on the GA end. We're going to talk about some content in the June issue of Over the Airwaves today. Bob, we appreciate your being here.
Well, hello, Paul. It's good to be with you.
The specific headline of one of the articles in the newsletter was "Beware of Unfamiliar Airplanes." And you have talked about this before, but this was kind of a fresh perspective and take on this because in many cases, you've talked about pilots of traditional GA aircraft moving into technologically advanced aircraft and faster aircraft and more capable or pressurized aircraft. But this time, you're talking about pilots who move down, and I'm not sure that's something everybody keeps in mind.
This was premised on an accident that took place, a 1,300-hour pilot, just one of, unfortunately, many, where an experienced pilot, in this case, stepped down to a tailwheel mall and took off in some crosswind, gusty conditions. And the airplane, according to the NTSB, bounced, wobbled, came back up and down, and then wound up coming down hard to the ground, spun to the ground. And the pilot died in the crash. And when they did the accident investigation and looked at the pilot's credentials, he was totally unfamiliar with this particular make, model, and size aircraft. You know, when we're looking at light tailwheel aircraft and you've been flying a Bonanza or you've been flying a Baron or you've been flying a Boeing 737 and you come out to the local homedrome airport and rent an airplane, just because they're smaller and lighter does not mean they are simpler and easier to fly. On the contrary, they are oftentimes more difficult to fly. And I know, having done a number of check rides with airline pilots that come out and rent from us, they will tell us flat out that compared to flying a transport category airplane, you get into one of these and you have your hands full. And so, yeah, more training is needed equally so when you step down in size and weight and characteristics of an airplane as you do when you step up.
Now, this seems like it's going to be a hot topic for a few years because as LSAs grow in adoption among pilots who have flown bigger stuff, one of the things I've found when I talk to people who manufacture and market light sport aircraft is that many of the buyers are not buying their first aircraft. They are buying, in some cases, a replacement aircraft. Some of these guys sold their Bonanzas or whatever years ago and want to get back in the air, and this looks like a great way to do it. Other people are buying them in addition to their existing aircraft for something more economical for patch putting. So it looks as though this could be a topic that's more relevant in the next few years than it has been in a long time.
Well, Paul, you know, it's no secret. I paid $8 a gallon for aviation fuel, 100 octane in Teterboro here last week. That's $8. And we've often quipped that once gasoline, half gas gets up to $10 a gallon, there's going to be a wholesale, reduction in GA flying. We've talked about this in our other podcasts. If that's the case, and we don't want to give up our flying, we're going to have to go from 10 and 13 hour a gallon per hour machines down to machines that burn 4 gallons an hour. And when we do that, there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. The point I'm trying to make, and obviously the point that the FAA is trying to make when they just recently came out with a new AC titled Airman Transition to Experimental or Unfamiliar Airplanes. And the subject of the AC is be sure you have proper training and practice with an instructor before going out and attempting to solo these airplanes. I know from personal experience, I've been asked to do flight reviews and oftentimes aircraft very, very close to ultralight class. Clipped Wing Challenger comes to mind where I went in. That's a very, very light, almost it is a fat ultralight in many respects. And my goodness sakes, that airplane is fun to fly, But you have your hands full in a gusty, crosswindy day. And unless you're really on your game and have some adequate training, you could lose control of that airplane and suffer some painful consequences.
Well, and Bob, the Experimental Aircraft Association started 2011 by releasing some amazing numbers about 2010, which showed that I think the number was 941 new experimental aircraft were put on the registration of the FAA in the year 2010. And that is more than the number of single-engine piston aircraft built in the factories of the world. So an increasing percentage of the GA, small GA fleet is going to be experimentals. And, I mean, when you can build an aircraft and label the panel with Dymo tape and put switches wherever you want, the chances of it being very, very unfamiliar are pretty high.
That's right. And unfortunately, we're seeing that in the accident data. There's been a marked increase in the number of home-built accidents, fatal accidents involving home-built aircraft. Now, that's not because the home-built aircraft are necessarily constructed any with any less quality. It's just that they're smaller, lighter aircraft. I mean, to step into an RV4 or an RV6, if you're coming out of a Cessna 172, you've got your hands full. Not that it's not doable. It is indeed doable, but it's like we keep saying, if you're going to move up in complexity, you need to also think about the requirements of moving down in complexity and the need for training. And we're not wired that way. You know, we're wired to believe that, you know, the bigger, the faster, the more difficult. And truth be told, that is not the case. Just almost the reverse.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about another feature in the June issue of Over the Airwaves. It was headlined, Simple Oversight or Gross Negligence? Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about some content from the June issue of Bob's newsletter. And Bob, you had an article that was headlined, Simple Oversight or Gross Negligence, unquote. And this seems to be one of those cases. We talked in last week's Monday Aerocast here about the bell curve and how there's 10% of people who are proficient right now flying airplanes around. There are 10% of people who are just hopeless. And then there's the 80% in the middle. This guy looks like he might have been near the bottom end of the 80% or the top end of the lower 10. Tell us about the accident that prompted this, because it's almost unbelievable if you were to make it up as a scenario in a human factors course.
This was one of the saddest, truly the saddest articles, subjects I have ever written about and over the airways. Just the long and short of it, it happened up in Anchorage, Alaska, involving a Cessna 206. The pilot had put his wife, his 14-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old child, and a 2-year-old child in a Cessna 206, along with some 435 pounds of lumber, 300 pounds of ceramic tile, 380 pounds of food and supplies, that put that airplane, according to calculations, at 658 pounds over maximum gross takeoff weight. And after the accident, they did the computation of where this stuff was stowed in the airplane. He was also someplace between 4 and 8 inches aft of his rear CG limit. So the predictable happened. He took off, the airplane kind of wallowed a little bit on takeoff and lost control and crashed at the end of the runway. The 2-year-old child, who had been sitting on mom's lap in the right front seat, not seat belted, died in the crash. The 4-year-old who was seriously injured was sitting on the 14-year-old's lap in the back seat. And again, the 4-year-old who should have been in his own seat was not seat belted. So when you look at all of the events associated with this accident, this was not a simple oversight and planning. This, in my opinion, was gross negligence. Now, you know, certainly this pilot has suffered. I would not trade places with him. His life will never be the same. You can well imagine, Paul. And to heap criticism on top of the grief he's already feeling is kind of a low shot, and I certainly don't want to do that. But there must be, at some point, criminal penalties for such gross, careless disregard for the rules. You know, as an owner of hunting weapons, I'm privileged, as anybody in America under the Second Amendment, to own firearms. But, you know, there are criminal penalties if you behave with these firearms in such a careless and reckless way that somebody dies. And this has been talked about in aviation literature for quite some time. At what point do criminal penalties enter into the picture when we're assessing fines and certificate action against pilots who are involved in such mishaps? I ask the question to my readers, and you know, I'm getting responses on both sides. You know, yes, this guy should spend the rest of his life in jail, and others are saying, no, you know, pilots are human, we make mistakes, and I agree. You know, I'm high on the list of people who make mistakes in airplanes. But when a mistake results in a fatality as a result of loading an airplane 600 pounds overweight, that goes beyond, in my view, a simple miscalculation. That is just simply pushing the limits to the outer limit in almost a painful disregard for the facts of aerodynamics and what makes airplanes fly. Perhaps he had done it before. You know, maybe he did it before 500 pounds overweight and it worked out just fine. So what's another 100 pounds? Well, he hit it and he paid the price.
Well, and you know, you've kind of pointed to the debate here. What do we do in a case like this? I don't know that you can pile a prison sentence on top of what this family's already going through, including the medical bills. But what about the rest of us? I mean, people will criticize you for trying to point out the lessons in something like this. But I don't know what else to do. I mean, this has to somehow be made of benefit to the people who can still benefit from the lesson.
Well, you know, and we can debate all day long what are the benefits, what social benefit does a prison term affect. I think what the benefit it affects is it is a deterrent to those of us who, you know, would fear the possibility of ever going to jail for something that we did, particularly something we did in an airplane. But I think we have to realize now, if criminal penalties were imposed, that yes, we are dealing with an element of lethality here. We have the power in our hands to kill people, not intentionally. And unfortunately, this happens, you know, by some oversight on our part, and that's tragic enough. But when you're so egregious in your behavior, as was apparent in this case, if any of us are such, you know, I mean, what would you expect happens to a pilot who flies drunk and kills somebody? We know there has to be criminal penalties there. All right. So you say, well, that's justified. Well, sure. Somebody who's flying under the influence of mind-altering drugs intentionally. Sure, there should be criminal penalties. But when we take innocent people, every time I write an article on a fatality, you know, I don't feel for the pilot. The pilot, we pilots, and I'm putting all pilots in the same category, we do what we do, and we know the attendant risks. But how many of us have taken a passenger along who knows nothing about the attendant risk and places their entire faith in you, in us as pilots? They trust us. That's why they got into the airplane. And when we abuse that trust to a point that we kill a passenger through gross negligent behavior, then I think that's no different than killing a person with a gun. I think it's almost a direct parallel. Now, I know our listeners, many will disagree. Bob, you're going across over the edge here when you're trying to assess criminal penalties. What I'm trying to do is find some way to cause all of us to stop and think anytime we get into an airplane that this is more than our insurance rates. This is more than the safety of our passengers. This is more than our own certificate. If we do something grossly wrong in this airplane, we could go to prison. And I think that's going to be a pretty effective deterrent.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your comments and making us think. And hopefully, if any one of us has been getting away with gross violations of the numbers in the POH, we'll give some thought to what happened to this guy and his family. And we will talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can subscribe to Bob's free monthly newsletter, find out more about his flight school, and contact him through his website at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.